Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmanel, and I'm your host. On today's program, college radio. It's been holding up the left end of the dial for decades and decades, bringing you eclectic and cool music you might not hear elsewhere, unique voices, and a type of radio that commercial side of the band has forgotten all about. But it's an endangered species, it seems like. I'll be talking with Jennifer Waits. She publishes a blog called Spinning Indie, where she covers the wide world of college stations and even tours them throughout the country. You will want to stay tuned. So as I just said, Jennifer Waits publishes a blog called Spinning Indie, musings about college radio and independent music. And as part of this, she tours college stations all over the country. I actually became aware of Jennifer and her blog because she visited here, where Media Geek is produced, at WNUR-FM in Evanston, Illinois, on the campus of Northwestern University. I did not get a chance to meet her, though I did read the profile of the station. She instead met and hung out with the station manager of the station at the time, Taylor Deer. But I started reading and thought this is something which no one else is doing, really, chronicling the cultural value of college radio and really letting stations know about other stations in a way no one else is and really needs to get done. And since then, Jennifer and I have started collaborating on a group blog about the future of radio called RadioSurvivor.com, which we do along with Matthew Lassar. And I thought I really need to get her here on the Media Geek program to talk more in depth about college radio. So I started out asking Jennifer about how she got her start in this great medium we call college radio.
I have a huge passion for college radio, and I feel like it hasn't been documented enough across a number of disciplines. Academically, college radio hasn't been covered as much as other subjects. And then even broader than that, radio in general hasn't been covered enough to my liking. So college radio is an extreme example of that. If you go through literature, it's really hard to find books about college radio. It's hard to find articles. And I didn't see any other blogs that were out there covering the scene. So I'm passionate about it. I'm a champion for it and felt like there needed to be a space online for people to learn more about college radio. And also, having been a college radio DJ for years and years, I know that you tend to be insular. Stations tend to be insular and don't tend to know much about what's going on at other stations around the country. So having been at a bunch of different stations, I kind of had a broader perspective and felt like I'd learned a lot from that. So I wanted to try to share that with other people by sharing stories from other stations so people could learn, you know, get ideas for how to do radio better or get inspiration from other stations.
And how did you get started in college radio?
When I was a freshman in college, second semester, I was really into music, and I don't even know, a friend and I decided to go, I guess, to the radio station meeting to find out about getting on the air, and we were really into it and started with a show our freshman year, and then the two of us eventually became co-music director for our last 2 years of college, and that whole scene just somehow resonated with me, and I just really loved it.
And what station did you start at?
I was at Haverford College, and it was WHRC, a very small carrier current station that you could only hear in the dining hall, and you could hear it on campus as well, but I lived in campus-owned apartments where you couldn't actually hear it, so very much toiling in obscurity is how I've always described that whole scene. So the primetime shows were all the mealtime shows, since we were piped into the dining hall, and you could do an entire show and find out later that the cafeteria workers had turned off the speakers, so nobody heard you. So it wasn't, you know, by no means was it big time. You know, it was AM carrier current, not that many listeners. But, you know, there still was a lot of pride in having a station community, and my co-music director and I worked really hard to get service from record labels, and we felt really excited when the records started coming in that we were trying to get.
I mean, what sort of music did your station focus on?
Well, we were trying to be, this is 1986, so we were trying to be playing more cutting edge. What did you call it then? It was, I guess we called it progressive music, but it wasn't.
Or alternative music, maybe.
Yeah, alternative before the word alternative was used. This was the time when people looking back on it see this as the heyday of college radio. So, you know, we're playing Replacements and Echo and the Bunnymen and Robin Hitchcock. But then we were adding stuff that was more obscure, you know, stuff that I still really like Half Japanese. More kind of out there stuff and art rock stuff. But for the most part, the DJs were playing things like Hooters and Bruce Springsteen, you know, and as a music director, you were trying to kind of push people's musical boundaries to try some of the more adventurous stuff. So we didn't have a lot of say over what people were playing, but the music directors wanted to kind of push it.
And so you mentioned it as the heyday of college radio. I mean, is it, you're kind of talking about a time when college radio had a lot of influence, I guess, in a way, on the mainstream music industry, more so than maybe it had in either the past or in kind of did in the future. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
I think it gets overstated maybe that the 80s were the heyday. I think maybe a lot of people my age in particular like to be nostalgic about that era as being the heyday. And I've met people who've said, oh, college radio still exists. I haven't listened in 20 years. You know, they sort of wear a badge of honor when they say that. But, you know, I think college radio is just as adventurous and it still has influence today. As you know, the whole media environment has gotten so much more fragmented, so people are learning about music in a lot of different ways now, and maybe back in the 80s, college radio had more of a captive audience.
And arguably, there might have been more college station then, because it's something which, some news that you've sort of charted on your blog has been the unfortunate demise of college stations in a lot of schools and universities.
I think, you know, and I haven't tracked this really specifically, so a lot of this is just kind of a supposition, but, you know, let's say you're looking at a list of stations in a small town in the middle of the country on the left side of the dial. I'm seeing fewer and fewer independent college stations, and it seems like many stations have sold off their frequencies to religious groups or to public radio organizations, or have given over more of their station's time to public radio. So I do feel like there are fewer of these indie homespun college radio stations than there were in the past. And some stations are giving up their FM licenses. Some stations are going internet only.
And I think maybe universities and colleges are not looking at their stations as educational opportunities, perhaps in the same way that they did in the past, since really there aren't so many radio jobs. You know, radio is not this sort of vibrant media industry that it was even going back into the 70s and 80s. And I at least for some schools, I think that they looked at their radio stations as some sort of training ground, if not directly attached to a curriculum. Nevertheless, you know, a fairly there was always some idea that students would learn some practical skills, career skills of some sort in radio stations. I wonder if that's still true.
I think you're right that I've heard arguments from some schools who are giving up their stations or are reducing funding or are taking away the FM aspect. Schools are saying, oh, well, we don't have a specific radio program, so it's hard to know how the radio station fits into the school. The really unfortunate part of that is that the people who are involved with the college radio station are gaining all kinds of skills that aren't necessarily directly tied to a radio career, but might be tied to all sorts of other amazing careers. And I've been actually attempting to write a history of my own college radio station at Haverford, and just contacting various alumni, I'm finding that there are a lot of people who have ended up in the entertainment industry. Some have ended up in radio. So even though the school didn't have a radio program, the radio station did end up giving a lot of people these skills that have taken them into certain careers. The station where I DJ now, we do some pretty amazing live remotes and events. We were just talking in a meeting recently about how, you know, should we be getting the word out to people that that's another great thing you can learn at a radio station is how to throw an amazing event. And that's not something that is necessarily taught in schools.
So it sounds like a lot of the skills that go into college radio, especially when it's student-run, I mean, our general management skills,
yeah.
You know, but with some particularities, anyone at a college radio station has to have some basic familiarity with the law and certain
right.
elements of broadcast. And then you have...
And back when I started, I had to... We took a test and we got an actual FCC license,
mm-hmm.
an individual FCC license. So I had my little orange card that I could take with me, you know, so that I could be on radio elsewhere. But, yeah, I mean, where I DJ right now is at KFJC in Los Altos Hills, California, and it's actually part of a radio program. All of us are registered as students in the radio program at Foothill, and people there have gone on to do radio jobs, and there are several people there now who have commercial radio jobs in addition to their radio shows. So yeah, I mean, there are still practical skills that we learn about board operation and logs, and mic skills, public files.
And there's also maybe what we might even call soft skills of learning how to present information in a coherent way,
mm-hmm.
Able to present yourself in
right.
a way that, again, is coherent and clear, and then on top of that, entertaining,
mm-hmm.
interesting, that can translate, I think, to all sorts of different life and career options.
Well, it's interesting. My trajectory in radio, I started out at Haverford, and then when I graduated, I didn't do radio for 6 years. I was working in San Francisco and going to shows all the time, so I was seeing music all the time. And what got me back into radio was I went to grad school in the Midwest, and I was afraid that in the small town where I was going to live, I was afraid that I was going to be out of touch with the whole music scene. So I got back involved with college radio in Bowling Green at WBGU, and at the same time, I was starting a graduate program and was teaching, and I found that getting back into radio and having to do a radio show every week and teaching, both of those skills kind of coalesced at the same time, and I felt like I was a much better public speaker because of the radio experience. So I completely agree with what you're saying. It can help on a number of levels.
So you were able to get back into college radio in the 90s there at
yeah.
It's at Bowling Green State University there
yeah.
in Ohio.
Yeah, and oddly enough, I was much, after I joined that station, I felt much more in touch with music than my friends back in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
which was completely unexpected. You know, I thought, oh, I'm going to this small town in the middle of nowhere. It's going to be really scary, and I'm going to be out of the loop, and that was furthest from the case, and I think that really re-energized my passion for college radio, especially in a small town where people are excited to have bands come to town and they aren't jaded like they might be in a big city. And the radio station was really this, it was a way to bring together all the people with the independent ideas in the community. And we had lots of people on the staff who were in bands, and people at the station would support those local bands. So we'd go out and see them and, you know, the Bowling Green sports bars and and clubs. It was a very, very vibrant community and really gave me an appreciation for the role that radio plays in all these different pockets of America.
And unlike the Haverford station, the Bowling Green station has a signal which reaches off campus, correct?
Yeah, it's FM. It's very flat, and I think, it has a pretty big range that they reach.
And did you get a lot of feedback from the local community? So not just the students, but folks in the Bowling Green area?
Yeah, and we knew that people were listening to it in various businesses in town. So, you know, like certain restaurants, we knew people had the station on. We had a pretty close connection with an independent record store in town. So people from the station were in and out of there. And then obviously with, like, the clubs, people at the station would help bring bands to town. Question.
It sounds, though, that you had an experience with a station there that was pretty well knit into the cultural life of the town.
Yeah. Well, and my impression, you know, coming, a liberal person coming from San Francisco, I didn't feel like I fit in that well in Bowling Green necessarily, but at the station I felt like I fit in. Mm-hmm. So it was a sort of oppositional culture, really, you know, to maybe the town and the typical student community there. Because it was a community that really needed to have a safe place for people with different views, I think.
It seems to me that despite maybe the lack of a lot of direct exchange between college radio stations, there nevertheless is a kind of shared culture.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because I think you've been to more stations than I have, way more.
Yeah, so I've visited about 13, and I've worked at four. I don't know. I mean, college radio is a comfortable scene to me, and every time I visit a station, I recognize people and types, and, you know, I feel the same way going into music clubs. You know, if it's something that's in your blood, that whole scene, there is something very familiar about every single station. You know, it's a group of people with this shared fanaticism and passion for music. I don't know. It's a crazy scene. I hear things about radio people being more introverted than the typical population. And I found that to be true. But I don't know. And increasingly, with radio kind of being on the outs, I guess we all have to stick together even more.
Well, and college radio tends to focus on unheard music,
right,
unheard genres, on, you know, what once was called alternative music, now tends to be called indie or independent music.
Right.
And a lot of it is rock, though I think I've seen over the last 10 years, it encompasses even more genres, you know, world music,
so.
and jazz and other musics that
noise.
Sort of, yeah, meet rock there in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's all music which is unified in the fact that it doesn't have a lot of mainstream exposure, I guess.
Right. And that's the goal of a lot of college stations is, hey, you know, there are plenty of places where you can hear mainstream music, so we're providing an outlet for this huge array of music that isn't getting exposure anywhere else.
Well, it's because there's all these artists and record labels out there that, when it comes to the radio, have no other outlet,
mm-hmm,
in any significant way. Given your exposure to all of this college radio, Why is it still relevant today? You know, you sort of mentioned earlier that there are a lot more venues or channels or spaces to get exposed to music in particular, but other types of auditory culture, than there were, say, in the 80s. You know, the so-called heyday of college radio. Why is it still important today, you know, especially when I think we're finding that the current generation of college students often don't listen to the radio and have never developed the habit to listen to radio.
Right. And they don't even understand its potential is what I heard recently, which makes a lot of sense. If you didn't grow up with examples of hearing great radio, then why would it be appealing? Why would you go visit your college radio station if everything you've heard on radio has been a result of this consolidated radio culture, you know, with very short playlists? I think where college radio and community radio excels is that it can be curated music, handpicked by a DJ. It provides filters. You know, if you're just going on the internet, surfing through music blogs, it's just a lot more overwhelming, I think. And things like Pandora, there's no human placing the music together. iPod on shuffle to me is the worst thing imaginable, you know. Because when I'm doing my show, I like to think about creating a flow of music and taking listeners on a journey. And I think that is still the power of radio and hearing things, and as a listener, hearing things that you didn't intend to hear. I think a lot of what people are listening to these days, they know ahead of time, oh, okay, this is what I'm going to download and I'm going to listen to it right now, as opposed to radio where there's still this element of mystery, you know, what am I going to hear next? And, you know, I still have this experience where I'm listening to college radio and I hear something and I'm just blown away and, you know, I'll still call up a DJ and ask, what is that? And have continued to learn about amazing things that way. And it's not even new music necessarily. It can be music that's years and years old that, you know, is in the archives of a college station. And that's another amazing thing I think about college radio, is that have respect for music and their music collection, is that they're this incredible resource for music from the past. So, you know, people in college radio stations can be rediscovering hidden gems, you know, every day just by wandering through a library. I think stations right now really need to work hard to continue to show to their schools that they're important and they're vibrant. You know, promote yourself and do cool things and, you know, remind your administration as to why you're valuable. You know, make sure that you're getting new people involved on a regular basis so that it looks like you have a vibrant organization. Every time there's been kind of a situation where a station seems to be in crisis, I try to do my best to either write about it, you know, get some publicity out about it, or write a letter to an administration myself talking about why I think college radio is important. So I think if you think that we're all in it together as college radio fans, then we should all continue to advocate.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a favorite, say, college radio moment that you think you could come up with and share?
When I was in Bowling Green, I was talking on the air during my last show about how I was going to be leaving, and somebody called up who was in high school and said that they had been listening to my show for a few years, and they were planning to have a friend of theirs tape the show for them when they were going off to college the next year, which I thought was really sweet.
And this music is now gained quite a bit of credibility in the academy. If you go to music or sociology, English, communications, you know, departments, you'll find faculty, probably of our generation, studying these genres and this music rather in depth. So it seems only to me to be fairly reasonable that the same music ought to be something someone could easily experience on campus and off.
That's true. Yeah, and I know that, you know, there are a lot of professors, too, who have college radio shows, sometimes focusing on some of these genres, which is great. I mean, we didn't talk about this, but I think people might not realize that college radio is full of people who range in age from high school students, you know, teenagers, all the way up to people in their 70s, 80s. So it's definitely not just 18 to 21-year-olds in college radio.
So if you were going to try and convince somebody that they should try and check out a college radio station, give it a tune in, what would you tell them? How would you make the case to them that it was worth exploring the left end of their dial?
Well, I think first of all, people don't realize there's a left end of the dial. And they might be a little scared of college radio. Maybe they tuned into a college station and they didn't quite know what to expect. So, you know, if it's a person who wants to seek out the unexpected, then they should just tune in, you know, without any preparation and, you know, wait to be surprised and delighted. But if it's somebody who's has a little more trepidation about it, then maybe do a little bit of research and look up a station's program guide and find out if there are shows that might appeal to you. So, you know, if a station is on 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and you tune in at 2 p.m. on Monday and hear something you don't like, then you might just write off that station. But perhaps there's something the next day at 7 p.m. that will blow your mind. So I think some people maybe need to take a look at a schedule ahead of time and figure out, like, oh, wow, they've got this free jazz show. I'm definitely going to check that out. So that might be a way to kind of dip into the waters. Somebody, I was interviewed by Ben Fong-Torres for his radio column in the San Francisco Chronicle, and I was extolling the virtues of college radio, and he doesn't really listen to college radio, but he said, yeah, you know, NPR could kind of be a gateway to college radio. I was like, yeah, that's true. I'm obsessed with it. I'm not your typical person. I think about it every day. But, you know, I really believe in independent culture, and I think radio is an important part of that. You know, that's another thing that schools are really losing if they drop radio altogether, is an independent voice. You know, and it's sad. You know, there are way too many things that are getting consolidated, and the last thing that most towns need is another public station or another religious station. So.
Yes, I agree with you completely. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure, thank you.
And you are listening to Media Geek, and this is an interview with Jennifer Waits, who writes the blog SpinningIndie.com, all about college radio, and of course, we've been talking in depth about college radio. And I asked for you, the listener, to tell me about your favorite college radio station, your favorite college radio memories via Twitter, twitter.com/MediaGeek. Got some responses. One response from Crotchmal, K-R-O-C-H-M-A-L. That's at twitter.com/Crotchmal, says, first day doing afternoon sports report. It's his favorite memory. Quote, had to read Hanna Mendlikova, Martina Navratilova. No stumbles. That was 20-plus years ago. That's from Crotchmal. I got two tweets from Hravan, 1975. That's H-R-A-V-A-N, not 1975. It says, favorite college radio memory, discovering that I love Black Sabbath via a late-night, small-hours Sabbath marathon on 95B FM. That's in Auckland, New Zealand, and it's that's a real college station. You can find out more about that station at 95bfm.com. And DRSISMS says, favorite station, WUTK, 90.3 FM in Knoxville, Tennessee. And you can find them online at WUTKradio.com. Got some direct messages from AJ, who is the person behind SyndicateProduct.com. A blog, and tweeted several memories. I know she has a long history in college radio. First memory is WCLH Wilkes College in Pennsylvania. Her intro to college radio while in high school during the golden era of college radio. WKDU 91.7 FM Drexel University is a memory. Yes, she went to Drexel but attended the station. She says, started out 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. early Saturday morning, eventually got better slots. Allegedly, PETA complained about the title for her show, Snoopy Got Neutered. And started there at WKDU when there were still three turntables in the main control room. CD player not put in until about 1991, and then discovered many bands she still loves today. Find her tweets at twitter.com/syndprod, S-Y-N-D-P-R-O-D. And that brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. That's the Media Geek blog. Radio.MediaGeek.net is where you find the radio show online, podcast, or listen in your browser. Twitter feed is at twitter.com/MediaGeek. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@MediaGeek.net, and check out my blog, it's actually a group blog, all about radio and its future, if you care about the medium at all, radiosurvivor.com. Thanks for tuning in.